Everybody, Sarah Grillo here. Today I've got Jim Palumbo from Dynamic Advisor Solutions to talk about maximizing profitability of your advisor firm. Hey, Jim.
Hi, Sarah.
Hey, everyone. This is Sarah, and welcome to my show. Woo-hoo-hoo! Oh, yeah. Okay, everybody. So, Jim, in addition to running Dynamic Advisor Solutions, which, by the way, I do some work with Dynamic Advisor Solutions as my client, just full disclosure here. Jim used to be an advisor himself and has some words of advice about how to run your firm with higher profitability. So first of all, Jim, why, hey, so you know, everyone listening, you know I have a baby by now, right? She just woke up from her nap and she's making a lot of noise. How dare she? Anyways, I'll go get her in a minute while Jim's talking. Jim. Why does profitability even matter?
Well, there's a number of good reasons that profitability is important to your practice. First and foremost is this is good for your clients. If you are a profitable investment advisory business, you are going to deliver better service, better end results to your client than if you are not profitable. You're going to be able to invest in technology, security, investment management, sub-advisors. You're going to be able to do all the things for your client that they need. So first of all, it's good for your client. Number two, it's good for you because you're going to be able to have the resources to grow that practice, to help more people, to reach more people in your community, to build value in that business for the long term and cash flow for the short term. So those are just a couple of the really simple and straightforward reasons to be profitable, other than many people have a notion that running a business for a profit is a good idea.
Mm-hmm. And so how does somebody increase the profit? Well, first of all, how many advisors, because you talk to advisors all the time, right? Dynamic Advisor Solutions is a platform for other advisors. When you talk to advisors, how many of them actually know their profit margin?
I would say very few, even up to practices that are 100 million of assets under management still may not know what their profit margins are.
Why not?
I think for many practices, especially as you go in that middle range of asset management, they view themselves as just a professional, right? So they're doing these things because they love it. They love their clients. Money comes into the bank account. Some of it pays bills. Some of it goes home. And that's about it. They're not really thinking of it as a business where they can begin measuring. The thing about a business and having a business system, which is something that Dynamic emphasizes, very strongly, is the dynamic business system that you have to have. Your business can be studied, it can be measured, and those processes and margins can be improved. That's a system. Mm-hmm. So when you begin to look at your business that way, you're being more of a professional, which makes you more professional for your clients. Here's an interesting part of it, Sarah, that even you and I haven't talked about before. If you are a ninja running your business, you just lights out doing a great job as an entrepreneur, business owner, tax efficient, good cash flow, low debt, high profit margin.
I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast classifies themselves that way.
Well, they may. So let's say you are that, right? How effective are you now with your client, that small business owner, the person who retires from a corporation, wants to start a business? You have such expertise because you're a great entrepreneur and you're an investment advisor, but you're able to bring all of that advice to the client to help them do better. Mm-hmm. Majority of my clients throughout my career were small business owners, and they valued my advice far more than the asset or investment selection in their account. It was the advice about taxes, business cash flows, the business expertise. think of the advisor, and I know nobody's going to put up their hand and volunteer that they're this person that's not profitable. They've got carrying a lot of personal debt, right? Your mortgage is right up to the eyebrows, your car payments, you're having trouble putting the kids through college.
Overdraft fees.
Yeah. All right. What are you able to bring to the table for your client? Right. You're not able to bring expertise as an entrepreneur, as a business owner. Run your practice like a business, and you're going to add value to your client relationships.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it is something that people kind of fall away from. And it's funny because not knowing your profit margin or not running a profitable business as a financial advisor is kind of like, you know, it's kind of like a client who doesn't save for retirement or doesn't check their credit score. I mean, it's the same thing. Like in the same way, it's being financially negligent. Because especially, and when you're a financial advisor, your business is your retirement. For a lot of advisors listening to this, your retirement is going to be funded by your practice, right?
Absolutely. And
it's an asset.
Think about the
like
value
of your asset, not knowing it.
Well, think about the value of the asset. So if you were to compare your investment advisory practice to a house, right? So you go to look at a house to buy, and that house has, you know, the grout has fallen out of the tile and the doors are all squeaky or off the hinges and the shingles are coming out. Grass hasn't been cut for a long time. My father used to tell me you can know everything you need to know about a man by looking at his front lawn. If it's not cut and weeds are growing in it, you know what kind of man that person is.
Right.
Same thing with your investment advisory practice. If you're the guy with the grass and the weeds growing out front and the doors falling off the hinges, your practice, your investment advisory practice, is not going to have that much value to a buyer down the road. So you're fantasizing, you're deluding yourself that you're going to have a great retirement asset. Now, you go look at a house, everything is perfect, the lawn is trim, granite countertops, you know, great 8-foot solid wood doors, all, none of them are squeaking and the pipes aren't leaking. You have a valuable asset in that home, and your practice is the same way. Run it like a business. Not only profitable, but growing. There's an extraordinarily high correlation, Sarah, between profitability, growth rate, and customer satisfaction, customer deliverables. Right? Your customers are getting better deliverables, better service, better investment management from growing profitable firms than they are from firms that are not. And there's plenty of studies, you can Google them and find them easily, that will show you those correlations.
Okay, so here I am. I'll take the rap here. Let's just pretend that I'm one of these advisors. Now, I know no one listening to this podcast falls into this category, but let's just say that I am, who doesn't have good profitability. What do I do?
Well, there are two main things that you can control, right? You can control income, revenue coming in the door, and you can control expenses going out. It's easier to control the revenue coming in. Well, let me say, it's easy to control both to a point, right? At a certain point, when you get somewhere between 10 and 20% overhead and expenses, you can chisel and chisel away at that and not do much better. But you can definitely control what's coming in, the revenue, and therefore you can then control the margin. So, you know, real quick couple of points. If you're going to grow your business, there are two ways to do it. It's strategic and organic. Organic is what everybody knows. Add more clients, add more assets under management. You're growing the top line.
Getting on YouTube, he means to add.
YouTube. Or getting on YouTube, LinkedIn, or
having a great blogger, writing blogs, having a great LinkedIn profile page. Okay. So you can grow the business organically. That's where people like me come in. Okay. So organically, blah, blah.
And just on that note, on the quick pause, Sarah, you know, I think I'm creative on all these things. I just have not found the time and ability to do that. And we work with Sarah to help us with that messaging and with those platforms. So, you know, if there's a place that you don't want to cut costs, it's there. Get some help. Get somebody like Sarah and just do it. Stop procrastinating. Stop thinking you're going to squeeze it in between appointments. Just stop. Just, you know, get some help. Do it the right way and you're going to see results. All right. Okay. So back on these other, on the growth parts of it. So to grow the business organically is what most people are familiar with. They're always like, how do I get more clients? The first question I get when I meet a new advisor, how do I get more clients? How do I get more assets? Mm-hmm. How do we grow the business? Mm-hmm. All right. So there's a whole science behind that, but there's also strategic growth. So strategic growth means bringing advisors in that you can train and mentor, et cetera. It would mean merging maybe with a partner or with another firm. And it would also be to be an acquirer. There's so much succession going on right now. Businesses are changing hands like crazy because of the aging advisor population. Huge opportunity. But guess what, Sarah? If you are not a profitable practice, are you going to be able to afford to acquire a practice?
Right.
No. You can't be an acquirer because you don't have any money.
Yeah, but people still say it.
You have to be profitable.
They don't think about that when they go, oh, I want to have a huge, I want to buy this one and that one. I want advisors to join me. But they don't think about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the reasons we were successful in acquiring advisors is that most advisors don't, like you said earlier, take their medicine. They don't have any savings. They couldn't make 6 months without a paycheck. So de facto, they almost have to join you because they don't have the personal financial resources to go out on their own. So it's a tremendous place to be. If you're profitable, you have deep pockets, you're in a great position to support other advisors in your community, in your area, et cetera. And that's a very profitable part of the business as well.
And that's what you did when you were, so your story is what? You were an advisor and then you started doing this. You started acquiring people because you had high profitability.
Correct. So I started with the organic growth, trying to build a very robust personal book of business, and then began to add, I would say, younger, smaller advisors underneath where I provided the platform. You know, they registered under our RIA. We provided them the tools and the training to be successful. And that worked out very well. And where your conversation started about profitability, it was those two components. So I tried to keep fixed overhead on the business under 20% on my personal book of business, right? So I knew that I could run my client with about 20% of that gross revenue going to overhead. When advisors come in, they're going to take a share between 60 and 80%. So you can have up to a 40% margin on the business that they bring in. And if you combine that 40% margin with your own 80% margin on your personal book, now you have a terrific mix of gross profit for that practice. And it gives it great longevity and it gives it a lot of power. And by that, I mean cash flow power to be able to grow, invest in technology, invest in marketing, invest in the tools that are needed for the client. So, you know, if you're just trying to make ends meet, that's not going to happen.
But how did you get your business to 80% profitability in the first place?
I started looking at where all the money goes, right? So you've got the technology, you've got personnel, you've got all these different components that go into overhead. And I just tried to always do what was necessary to get by and to make the business work rather than just do things that didn't matter, right? So if you start with a particular software and it ends up after a period of time not having an impact on your practice or it doesn't matter to the client, stop paying for it. You know, don't use it. And so by being efficient, we're able to do that. Right now, at the size that we grew to be, we found that outsourcing was the smartest thing. So as an example, I can hire a couple of people. If I live in a small town somewhere in America, hire a couple people and try to train them to support me as an advisor. That's a huge learning curve to just bring a local person in your community in and try to teach them to be professional advisor support. In the end, you basically end up having glorified administrative assistants rather than trained professionals. I can outsource to a firm like ours, Dynamic, and get well-trained professional support staff and all the technology that supports it. And I can do that under 20%. So why would I spend all kinds of money on an office? Why do I need a 3,000 square foot office? Because I have to house all these people that aren't trained and don't know what they're doing. And now I'm running. I'm running overhead at 60% on my business, and I'm getting no efficiency out of that. I have a ginormous office and a server and networking and desks and chairs and all that ridiculous stuff. What does that have to do with helping the client? Nothing. All right. You got to get rid of all that.
It looks good, though. I think a lot of people like to say, come by my office. And, you know, they like the receptionist in the front, and they like the, oh, we have this whole floor.
I remember when I first got started in the business, the most important thing to me was I wanted my office to look like a trading floor. So instead of private offices, I had a big open area and had all the desks and I had the personnel. And of course, this is back in the 90s. I wanted a ticker. Well, they're hard to come by. So it took me months to find a ticker. I could have a ticker up on the wall with the stock prices going across the ticker. And guess what I found out? In 6 months, nobody came to visit my office. All right. Our culture, our society was already getting busy. People would rather have a phone call or go have coffee. They didn't want to come to the office. I go, holy cow. I got desks all over the place. I got computers. Nobody wanted it. Guess what business I was in? I was in the secondhand furniture business. I had to get rid of all that furniture, all those computers, and start to focus on what matters. Right. What matters is the relationships with those clients and the real help that you bring them, right? And if you're providing a depth of service, especially at this level for small businesses or for people that are W-2 employees, the retirement planning, estate planning, succession for their kids, when you're doing all that, you're adding so much value. They don't care about all that other stuff, the size of the office and all the little bodies you have running around making coffee at your office. They don't care about that. You can accomplish all of that for pennies on the dollar by outsourcing it. That absolutely is something you have to do once you get, let's say $20 million or so.
Right.
You just can't afford at that kind of revenue. You know, you've got $100,000 of gross revenue. You can't afford a whole staff in a big office on that kind of money. There's nothing left.
The time required too.
Yeah, well then, yeah, you're trying to run all of that and trying to train those people. You know, the investment advisory world is not as simple as it used to be. It's not just a couple of mutual funds and a fax machine. You know, it's far more complex. And the likelihood of you bringing in local people to meet that need when your gross revenue on your business is low six figures, it's very difficult. Almost, I would say it's impossible.
No, it's impossible.
You know, maybe if you're in Manhattan, you know, yeah, you're going to find those people. But the rest of America, that's a tough nut to crack.
Right. Okay, so we're coming to the end here. But what I like to do is to wrap with three things that advisors can take away about the lesson of the podcast. So in this case, it's maximizing the profitability of your firm. So what would be three things? You could start with number one. Typically, that's how it's done. That you would tell advisors listening to this about maximizing the profitability of their practice.
Number one, have a plan. Have a vision of what you want your business to look like 3 years from now. 5 years from now, what does your average day look like? And begin to work toward that goal. Number two, run the business like a business. You know, begin to do the things that are necessary to make the business look professional. The third is pretty tedious, but it is learn how to read and create a good financial statement for your business. that's probably the single biggest step. Even the CFPs and CFAs that I know, most of them can't even read a financial statement. Not only do you need to know how to read a financial statement, you need to have a killer financial statement, P&L and balance sheet for your business. And when you're good at that, you're going to be invaluable to your clients. You're going to see your business grow because you're doing it for yourself. You're taking your own medicine.
And I would add a fourth one is when you're looking to maximize profitability, really do think about the tools that are available at your fingertips that maybe weren't available when you started out in the business. Because it's not just a matter of you gaining an efficiency for your business, and that's nice, or you saving some money or saving on costs. Your competitors have these tools available as well. Do you really want to be the person that's going out there searching on monster.com or that's posting up in your local job board to try to find somebody to answer the phone when you could, your competitor could be signing up with, you know, from like Dynamic or another advisor system and have someone else taking care of it for them. Now, granted, they're going to have to pay for it. It comes out of their, you know, they pay a fee to that firm for doing it. But in terms of the time and the stress and all the that's involved, you might not be that, you might, it might not be that much of a setback to have to sacrifice some of your revenue to that.
Yeah, and if you think about, Sarah, and a good point, I didn't want my top 3 points to be just a plug, but if you think about the services that your business and our business provides, right? Complete back office, investment management, technology outsource that an advisor can do for 40% less than they can do it on their own. Why wouldn't you do it? Same thing with what you do, Sarah. Marketing, I have tried for years to build marketing in-house. Forget about it. It's so much easier. Why not go to somebody like Sarah and just get it done right? It's way less than you could do trying to hire somebody in-house to do it or getting your receptionist to be the marketing person. Forget about it. Just, you know, outsource it, go to the right person, do it the right way. It is worth it. You end up 10 times, you know, we're talking about profitability, 10 times more profitable to do it that way than try to DIY it.
Right. Okay, great. Everybody, thank you for listening. Please subscribe, rate, and review this show, and we'll see you next time. Bye.